In Athens, Antiochus began the building of the enormous Temple of Olympian Zeus, and Hadrian finished it. And in Jerusalem as well, Hadrian finished what Antiochus was only able to start. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 105. Enter Hadrian. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. In order to understand what drove Hadrian's approach to Jerusalem and why Hadrian was so hated by rabbinic tradition, we must journey in our mind's eye not to Rome or even to Jerusalem, but rather to Athens. Let us imagine ourselves standing today atop the Acropolis. On one side of the city, we can see the remnants of the ancient agora, the marketplace. But standing there, one can see on the other side a series of large columns. If we go to it, we will be looking at the remains of what was once a large temple. Though it is now in ruins, it was once known as the Temple of Olympian Zeus, and it was nothing less than the largest pagan house of worship in the Greek world. Begun in the 6th century BCE and then almost immediately halted, its construction was begun in earnest by a Syrian emperor whose name we Jews all know, Antiochus IV, the villain at the heart of the Hanukkah story. What made Antiochus unique in Jewish history was that while there had been Israelites who had embraced idolatry, and there had been enemies of Israel such as Nebuchadnezzar who had attacked and even destroyed Jerusalem, not until Antiochus had a Gentile pagan king used his power in order to endorse idolatry in the temple, in Judaism's most sacred site. That is why the Hasmonean revolt broke out. Thanks to Antiochus' failure, Judaism survived, monotheism survived, and Jerusalem's mountain remained dedicated to the biblical God and not to Zeus. It's therefore a fitting reminder of Antiochus' failure to advance paganism that he died with his own project in Athens, unfinished, with only half of the Temple of Olympian Zeus completed. But there is someone who took up Antiochus' torch, someone who hundreds of years later completed the Temple of Olympian Zeus, highlighting his own reverence for Hellenism. This was a man whose actions in Jerusalem would provoke the Bar Kokhba revolt, the man who would be more hated in rabbinic literature than any other. Let us summarize the events in Rome over the 60 years following the destruction of the temple in 70 CE. Vespasian died in the year 79, and Titus reigned for a mere 2 years after, followed by his brother Domitian, who was assassinated in 96, who was then followed briefly by Nerva, and then by a general, Trajan. Trajan's long reign lasted until the year 117. He was seen as successful by many students of the empire, but his hostile relations with the Jews throughout his territory is recorded in many places in rabbinic literature. Trajan was said to have appointed as his heir a relative of his, Hadrian, who came to the throne in 117. Hadrian's own dedication to pagan culture can be seen in many remains of the empire, including in Athens. For in Athens, one can see an enormous arch similar to the triumphal arches of Rome. And this is Hadrian's arch. And it is there because Hadrian was a Hellenophile who, more than half a century after the destruction of the temple, sought to further spread the culture of Athens throughout every part of the land that he ruled. And he, like Antiochus, sought to make Jerusalem a pagan city and to make the mountain that once housed the temple of the Hebrew God into a site where the pantheon of the Greek and Roman deities could be celebrated and worshipped. Hadrian, therefore, sought to build a new city in Jerusalem, a pagan one, with a temple of Jupiter on the Temple Mount itself. Thus, Simon Sebag Montefiore tells us the following about Hadrian and his actions in Jerusalem beginning in the year 130. Quote, Hadrian, now age 54, born in Spain to a family rich from the production of olive oil, was a man seemingly designed to rule the empire. Blessed with a photographic memory, he could dictate, listen, and consult simultaneously. He designed his own architecture and composed his own poetry and music. He existed in perpetual movement, restlessly traveling the provinces to reorganize and consolidate the empire. He was criticized for withdrawing from Trajan's hard-won conquests in Dacia and Iraq. Instead, he envisaged a stable empire united by Greek culture, a taste so marked that he was nicknamed the Greekling. And Montefiore adds, now in Jerusalem, on the wreckage of the Jewish city, he planned the classic Roman town, built around the worship of Roman, Greek, and Egyptian gods. A splendid three-gated entrance, the Neapolis, today's Damascus Gate, built with Herodian stones, opened into a circular space decorated with a column, whence the two main streets, the Cardinus, axes, led down to two forums. And Montefiore adds, Hadrian planned a shrine on the Temple Mount, marked by a grandiose equestrian statue of himself. Hadrian was deliberately eradicating Jerusalem's Jewishness. Indeed, he had studied that other Philhellenic showman, Antiochus Epiphanes, reviving his plan to build an Olympian temple in Athens, end quote. We are now able to understand why the Talmud reserves a hatred for Hadrian that it did not even express toward his predecessors Titus and Vespasian, under whom the temple had been destroyed. Why Hadrian, and specifically Hadrian, is constantly cursed in the Talmud with the phrase, "May his bones be ground into dust." Previous Roman emperors had conquered Jerusalem and destroyed the temple because the Jews had rebelled against their political authority. In Hadrian's day, however, Jerusalem had already fallen. Judea was defeated. But this was not enough for him. Hadrian is hated because he is, in a certain sense, the heir to Antiochus of his age. And worse, he is the Antiochus who succeeded. Antiochus sought to make Jerusalem into a pagan city, but he was expelled by Judah the Maccabee. Hadrian sought to make Jerusalem into a pagan city, and he truly achieved his aim, at least for some time. And it was this very endeavor that sparked the rebellion of Bar Kokhba, or as the Roman historian Cassius Dio succinctly states, quote, "At Jerusalem he founded a city in place of the one which had been razed to the ground, naming it Aelia Capitolina, and on the site of the temple of the god he raised a new temple to Jupiter. This brought on a war of no slight importance nor of brief duration," end quote. Thus, as understood by historians such as Yitzhak ben Shalom, it was the events of Hanukkah that in a certain sense inspired Bar Kokhba. And therefore, from a Jewish perspective, it can be said that the fact that the building of the largest temple in Athens, begun by Antiochus, was finished 3 centuries later by Hadrian, is sadly fitting, for they were two figures of the classical period who sought in Athens to celebrate their dedication to its idolatry and to spreading that idolatry around the world. In Athens, Antiochus began the building of the enormous Temple of Olympian Zeus, and Hadrian finished it. And in Jerusalem as well, Hadrian finished what Antiochus was only able to start. The Jews sought to permanently expel Antiochus's forces from the Temple Mount. The traditional Jews sought to permanently expel Antiochus's forces from the Temple Mount, and they succeeded. And then, Jews loyal to the faith of Judaism sought to permanently expel Hadrian from the Temple Mount. And, as we will discuss this week, in the end they failed in one of the most challenging moments in Jewish history. Hadrian succeeded where Antiochus failed. Vespasian and Titus conquered Jerusalem, but Hadrian paganized Jerusalem and the Temple Mount. Nevertheless, here too, with hindsight, there is opportunity for inspiration. Several years ago, the Israel Museum featured an exhibition about this Roman emperor who was so hated by the Jews, featuring bronze busts of Hadrian, one from the museum collection itself, another from the British Museum, and another from the Louvre. Articles discuss the historic importance of these busts, the differences in appearance between them, and what they can tell us about Hadrian and how he looked. But I would say that more interesting and more inspiring is a depiction of Hadrian that one can visit today, a depiction that is headless, and that is in Athens, on the other side of the Acropolis from the remains of the Temple of Olympian Zeus, in the area that was once known as the Agora, where Socrates used to walk and where the vibrancy of Athens was once to be discovered. Archaeology has revealed that during the early centuries of the Common Era, there was a synagogue built in the Agora. Now it no longer stands. Like the rest of the Agora, it is gone. But in the ruins, there is an inscription made long ago in the shape of a menorah, a symbol of a Jewish faith that lives still, even as pagan Greek civilization disappeared centuries before. It struck me, looking at this menorah, audaciously inscribed facing the Greek market, that the Talmud tells us that the Hanukkah lights are meant to be lit facing the public, ad shetich leregel min hashuk, until the feet, until the vibrancy of the passersby leave the market. This, it struck me, is not only a religious requirement, but also, as it were, prophetic prediction. The Jewish flame burns even as the agora, the Greek market, empties out. Today, one can stand in the sight of ancient Athens, in the agora, the once vibrant marketplace of Greek merchandise and of Greek ideas, and it is empty. Nothing is there. A museum, but the city as it once was, as we have discussed, is gone. And even more strikingly, ladies and gentlemen, what one sees in the remnants of the agora are several statues, including one of Hadrian that has now lost its head. Hadrian, defeater of Bar Kokhba, enemy of the Jewish people. "May his bones be ground into dust," the rabbi said. And not only are his bones dust, but the most important parts of this stone statue set up to celebrate him are dust as well. Dust indeed. But one nation and its faith lives eternally. This is Mayor Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow.